Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, I think we've decanted for long enough. It's time to sit back and enjoy Two Sharp Reds with Mark Schwarzer and Ollie Giel.
Yes, it certainly is, but I must say, normally I'd be getting more excited, a little bit more happy, because this week was supposed to be the first week that myself and Mark Schwarzer would get together face-to-face to try a bottle of the Burgundy grape and then compare it, of course, to a player past or present. But I'll chime you in here, Mark, because you know, it was going to be the first time in almost 6 months we were going to see each other. But, of course, now we're back into lockdown here in the UK.
It's not meant to be, is it? I mean, people are keeping... There's something greater than... Something bigger at play here that's keeping us apart, Ollie. I'm sorry.
It is unfair, though, because I'm looking at the beautiful bottle of mother's milk that's just been winking me in the eye for about 6 months, and I can't believe I've not touched it, all in anticipation for today. And now, I don't know when I'm going to see you.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? The ridiculous thing about it is I'm going to games. I'm going to go to the Champions League tomorrow night. I'm going to go to Chelsea against Sevilla. Then I'm going to Manchester for Manchester City against Porto. So it's kind of like some things you can do, which you shouldn't be doing, but you're allowed to do it. And then other things which you should be allowed to do, you're not allowed to do, like going and meeting up with people. And
yeah.
It's just, to be fair, we could have done it. We could have met up, but we would have had to keep socially distanced apart. We would have had to do the recording outside. And hence, I mean, due to the fact that in England, really, it's not really up to doing a lot of things outside. Mind you, I have to say, today's weather is pretty, pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm here with a fleece and a beanie on, though. That's because...
I bet you it's warmer outside than it is in your apartment.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yep. And you know me. I obviously don't want to be paying for heating too much. You could see that coming a mile away.
Just very understanding. And mind you, you know what? You don't need to either. You've got a lot of insulation there.
Yeah. That reminds me, speaking of people doing things and not doing things and other people doing other stuff, what did you make of Arsene Wenger's book launch? And I don't know if you saw the images. There were possibly thousands of people crammed into the Apollo Theatre.
Yeah, for some reason, I mean, I don't want to be critical of the theatre industry, because I'm a big fan and I feel for them. But whenever there's been something in a theatre, an auditorium, people are crammed in. And it doesn't make any sense, absolutely not. And I can understand why people would want to be crammed in and watch or listen to Arsene Wenger, because he's a great guy and he's a very intelligent man and very worthwhile to listen to. Whether or not you're an Arsenal fan or not, I think he's an impressive individual. We've got a lot of time for him. And, you know, his job at FIFA I think it's a great role for someone of Arsene Wenger's stature. What I loved the most about his book launch was Mourinho's response to not being mentioned at all in the book. I thought that was predictable, but I mean, if you were to ask me what would Mourinho say, I probably wouldn't have said word for word what he said, but I'd go along the lines of that, you know.
Can you elaborate for the uninitiated what he said?
Well, the fact that he's not being mentioned in the book, that he said, of course, why would he mention him in the book? Because he never won against him, obviously they had touchline spats, and that would have been along the same for lines. Why would he talk about something that's so negative in his career? That little cross next to list, long list of accomplishments in the game that he wasn't able to beat Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, definitely put an asterisk there, but you're spot on. Perfect Jose response. And Jose's been kicking off again, and we'll be absolutely getting to that, because I've got to say, this weekend of the Premier League, I mean, you could have looked at thousands of different things. So before we get stuck into the football, and we really do need to get stuck in, let's talk about the wine we'll be trying. As I touched on before, we do, if you're new to the show, we do like to try a bottle of red wine and then compare that red wine at the end of the episode to a player, past or present. Normally, if we're together, we try the same wine, but since we've been apart for so long, we like to try separate wines. So, Mark, what are you going for today?
I am going for a wine. It's called Protos. Spanish wine, of course, Ribera Duero. It is a fabulous bottle of red wine, Spanish red wine. I've had numerous bottles of this. It is a favourite of my friends and I down in Spain. It is a wonderful bottle of wine, I have to say. It is full and concentrated on the nose with ripe red berries and a touch of oaky aromas. On the palate, it is rich and velvety with ripe tannins and a lightning finish on a typical Ribera Duero Protos, aged 6 months in the oak barrel. It is a wonderfully smooth and full-bodied wine, I have to say. And again, it is right up your alley.
Yep.
Wonderful, wonderful bottle of wine.
I've just had a look online, and Protos means, it derives from the word first. So I wonder if that means first harvest of the grape for the season, or where that sort of comes from.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, because it doesn't actually say anything on the bottle itself. So you could be right. I mean, it's a deep cherry colour with purple glints. Mm-hmm. That's the bottle. And like I said, it is definitely a favourite of mine.
Well, I've gone for a very special wine, and I didn't know when it was going to be appropriate to try this one. But of course, we were sent a couple of bottles not too long ago, or a little while ago now, I suppose, from, of course, Tom Jonas and Brad Ebert from the Port Adelaide Football Club. They sent us a few bottles of the Hey Diddle Shiraz, to which I just kept one, you know, just tucked on my ear for a rainy day. And of course, during the week, Mark, I'm not sure. I know you love your footy, but I think this one might have gone over your head. But Brad has called time on his career, unfortunately suffered another concussion. So he's called it time at his magnificent career at Port Adelaide, but I thought it was a really appropriate time to decant a bottle of Hey Diddle Shiraz to just say cheers to Brad Ebert.
Yeah, Brad, cheers to you as well, and a wonderful career. And it's a shame that you've had to end it prematurely, but I'm sure with your vineyard, you'll keep yourself very, very busy.
All right, mate, let's get stuck into the footy. So much to talk about. I guess it's only normal. I think that a bit of a theme, yeah, so far as we've been starting with the early kickoff on the Saturday. So let's do that. Merseyside derby. I mean, you couldn't pick a better place to start. I've got three specific dot points here that need to be talked about. Yep. Where do you want to start, though? I mean, I'm sure you've got lots to say. Look, Pickford on Van Dijk, that incident. Can you talk me through your thoughts?
Well, the minute the challenge took place, I said, straight away, red card. And I wasn't 100% sure on the actual the rules of the game. In terms of, is it offside? So if it's not offside, then it has to be a red card. But if it's offside, does that mean that doesn't actually incur a red card? But actually, you think about it, and you sit back and you go through it logically, of course it does, because if the whistle gets blown for full time, or even during a game, it gets blown for a free kick that happened somewhere in the game, and you would have run up and two-foot someone, the referee would send you off, regardless. So if it's even a completely separate incident. So, you know, after a game, players get sent off for dissent, for fighting, whatever it is. Players get sent off down the tunnel. There are even instances in over the course of time where players are being sent off in the tunnel before the game's even started. Mm-hmm. So there's no other word other than reckless, and it had to be a red card.
It actually reminds me a lot of episodes ago now. I remember specifically you telling me one of your big gripes is when someone goes in for a tackle, they might technically get the ball first, but then they run through, you know, with two feet up. And people have said, yeah, but he got the ball first. And you go, well, your point was, yeah, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't give you a free license to then just do whatever you want.
Absolutely. It's about control. Whether or not a player has control, then it's about, okay, even if he has control, what is the intent? And then the challenge itself, like, you know, how does the challenge occur? I don't know anyone other than an Everton fan who probably would think that that's not a red card. I think most Everton fans would think that's a red card. Mm. And they got very, very lucky in that decision. If that were to happen the reverse, so if Adrian had done that on, say, on Rodriguez, James Rodriguez, could you imagine the outcry, the uproar? It'd be the reverse, like it's happening with Liverpool fans and the manager, which, you know, Jurgen Klopp, which is completely understandable. And I think Jordan Pickford is a very, very lucky young man that he didn't get sent off. He actually got lucky twice in that game, because that was the first one where he should have been sent off. So he doesn't get sent off. He stays on and plays the game. Then the Jordan Henderson winner, which wasn't obviously the winner, had it have been a winner, had it have stood, there would have been serious questions and a huge spotlight on Jordan Pickford's performance, because it was a poor goal strike of the ball to let in. He got saved by the fact that it was given offside. I'm a fan of VAR, so from day one. Yes, there's improvement that needs to be done. You have to pick a point. Where is offside? Where is it offside? They draw the line and it's offside. If he's offside by a millimetre or if he's offside by a foot, it doesn't matter. It's offside, because you have to draw a line. So he's offside. End of.
But the freeze frame they showed when Thiago had passed it almost looked like the ball had already left his foot as well.
Well, I think this is one of the very rare instances in the game, in the game so far, meaning football and all the games that have been played, whereby the speed of the frames per second come into it. And because of the speed of cameras that they're using, obviously wasn't able to break it down even further. So it got to the point where it was so touch and go. And then obviously in the end, they've obviously decided that they've found an angle that shows that when the ball is kicked, they believe he's offside by drawing the lines, by the freeze frame and all that sort of stuff. So, you know what? We're talking about millimetres in the end. And if that's where a decision is being decided upon, that, and whether that's right or wrong based on millimetres, it's a vast improvement to what we've previously had. Mm-hmm. When there's no VAR, because then you're just using the naked eye of a linesman or a referee to make those decisions. And far too often, the decisions were, not far too often, but in a higher percentage of times, they were incorrect compared to now whilst using VAR.
What did you make of also Jordan Henderson's comments afterwards? He sort of said that, and don't get me wrong, I think Jordan Henderson's a fantastic speaker. I think the way he comes across, even when he's frustrated, he does it sort of the right way. You know, a real captain in so many words. But he did suggest that it feels like they just put the line wherever they want. And do you think he might get in a bit of trouble for that? Because it does start to question the integrity of the game, which isn't a great look from someone's captain.
Well, I think he'll definitely have a word spoken to him about it. And you can understand the frustration. I can relate. I've been in the situation before. You've lost a game or you've drawn a game. You haven't won or you've lost because of a decision that's gone against you. And when I played, we didn't have VAR. So the decisions were based on referees and linesmen's decisions. And like I said before, you know, mistakes occurred. And I've been on the receiving end of mistakes. I've also been on the receiving end of benefited from a referee or linesman's mistake. But, you know, overall, I mean, as a player, I'd rather win a game or lose a game, whatever, in a fair way. So if the decision is the right decision based on the technology we have and it shows that, yes, he's onside or offside, then so be it. But that doesn't change the fact that players are so emotionally involved in the game. Add to the mix that it's a Merseyside derby. Add to the mix that the Everton side hadn't lost a game up to that point. So, you know, it was 10 years to the day since they last time they won the Merseyside derby. So there was a lot of emotions in it. So even Jordan Henderson, who is normally incredibly well-spoken and reserved and cautious, can sometimes, and if that's the extent of his frustration, he's still done incredibly well.
Yeah, I agree. Fair play in that scenario. And then the final thing we need to talk about from that Merseyside game, I suppose, other than just saying it was a bloody good game of football, and I think there were so many moments in it that probably distracted us from that. So I think it's important to say how, you know, the resilience of Everton in particular, I thought was incredible. But Richarlison's tackle on Thiago as well.
It's given as a red, and clearly it deserved to be a red. And you know what? I think it's funny, you know, that it wasn't the reverse. I thought Liverpool did really, really well to contain the frustration, probably anger of the Van Dijk challenge, mm-hmm. and that Jordan Pickford got away with it, that no Liverpool player let their emotions get the better of them in a derby match. But like, you're right, the quality of the derby match was a very good game, very entertaining. I thought the goals were excellent. Well, three out of the four at least were excellent. Calvert-Lewin's header was brilliant. I thought Mo Salah's finish was sublime. Mane's finish early on was great, was a great finish. So the quality of the game was very, very good. James Rodriguez, I thought, was a little bit quieter than what we've used to seeing so far in the Premier League, but then he's playing against one of the best teams in the world, if not the best team in the world. So you'd understand that. But yeah, exciting. You know what? It makes it, hopefully it's just an indication of how this season may unravel. And hopefully the quality continues. And hopefully we see more and more high quality games. And then the remarkable thing is that the quality of the game, the level of the quality of the game, the level of performance was in a stadium where there was no crowd. So yeah. If you imagine what it would have been like had that been full house, maybe we'd have seen more red cards. Maybe the emotion side of the Liverpool player would have come out more because the Liverpool fans being you know, outraged by the Jordan Pickford challenge on Van Dijk. And maybe it would have been a different outcome. But it was still remarkable considering no one was in the stadium to watch it.
What will be really interesting to see is we know now as well that it's been confirmed that Van Dijk has torn his ACL. So he's done an Ollie Gill. So he'll be out for quite a while. Probably not as long as me. I would have thought they'd probably try and get him out there a bit sooner.
You're still out, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm still out. Indefinitely. There's a real red cross next to my name. But what I think will be interesting to see, I hope in a sense that we'll probably see it in games against Liverpool, maybe even up a little bit, because you see in particular with that Calvert-Lewin goal, when he goes up against Gomez, who's, you know, still a pretty good centre-back, I don't think he probably would have climbed as high or would have been able to get around Van Dijk if he was on. And so
not necessarily the case. I think the difference would have quite possibly have been that Van Dijk would have at least challenged him. Gomez, neither Gomez nor Robinson actually put in a challenge. And that was the issue for me. Calvert-Lewin, a remarkable leap and a great, great header. But it was uncontested. You know, both players didn't challenge him. So maybe Van Dijk wouldn't have allowed that to happen. Maybe his body position would have been different. Maybe he would have, you know, as a defender, the very least you can do is just challenge. Even if you're caught out, even if you're caught a step behind, you've got to try and put off the attacker. And whether that means you are, it's a slice of a body check, it's a slice of a nudge that may put his header off target. The problem was he didn't get any of that. So it was there for Calvert-Lewin to finish. And he did it incredibly well.
Okay, Mark, so if I was to say the sentence to you, and this is a direct quote, 2 points thrown away. And this is a manager in the Premier League. Have a guess who that could be. And it could be, in fairness, a few people.
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple. I think it could have either been Jose Mourinho or Frank Lampard.
Well, I'm going to say you're absolutely spot on. It was Frank Lampard. So let's talk about Chelsea-Southampton, because it does feel like it was 2 points thrown away. Good thing from a Chelsea perspective, we've finally seen that link-up between Havertz and Werner. Werner probably used in a slightly different position. Some would say his best position, which was really great to see. But just that continuous defensive issues, Mark, that you thought when you looked at who they brought in, thought maybe surely this is going to be all right, but not to be.
Well, I mean, firstly, you know, Thiago Silva, I don't think necessarily is the answer that's going to solve all the defensive issues. I think one of their biggest issues is not necessarily personnel. There is a case to say, yes, we need, you know, Chelsea need better centre-halves or a couple of better centre-halves. But for me, it's more about the way they don't defend as a team. So any good team that it has a really good defensive record, they defend as an entire team, 11 players. They all take part in their defensive roles. So I would look at the way that Chelsea plays and their attacking side of the game, which is phenomenal. And that's a, you know, it's a big reason why they're so entertaining to watch, but it's also a big reason why they concede so many goals. You know, more often than not, they'll have five players, if not six players, in the opposition's box or thereabouts. You know, whether it's Ben Chilwell pushing forward on the left or Reece James on the right, and together with the three attacking players, you know, there's at least five players, if not six players at times, in that sort of final third of the pitch. And it's what happens when the ball breaks down, when they lose the ball. How quickly do they recover? How quickly do they regain their shape? Where does the defensive duties begin? Do they begin the minute you lose the ball, they try and close out and win the ball all over the pitch? Or do the defence then drop back whilst the front three, front five start to put more pressure on, and then there's a massive gap and it's one pass and there's five players out of the game? So I think there's lots of aspects of the Chelsea team at the moment that needs to improve upon. It's easy to point a finger at the centre-halves. It's easy to point a finger at the goalkeeper. Yes, the goalkeeper's made mistakes and there's no denying that. But he's also made the mistakes because he's been exposed so hugely. That's not to say that he shouldn't be making the mistakes, because he shouldn't be. Everyone can make a mistake, but he's made too many mistakes already.
Do you think it's frustrating for him in the sense that Kepa's almost been giving himself a second chance given Mendy's injury, but he's not really taking advantage of it from what we've seen?
No, he's not. And I think a lot of that is down to, I think mentally he's all over the place.
Yeah.
It just reeks of a player's performance since the start of the season. Well, not even since his last season. A player that's constantly battling with himself in the way he's performing or not performing, the mistakes he's making, the pressure he's feeling from the outside, the momentum, the fans obviously not happy, the stats about how many goals he's conceding, the worst shot to save percentage ratio in the Premier League. And it's affecting him on the football pitch. And as a football player, doesn't matter what position you are in, you have to try and separate the criticism off the pitch from when you go on with that pitch. On that pitch, you have to go there and try and make sure that none of that external pressure is actually playing its part in your performance. And unfortunately, with Kepa, his performances have been suffering from the external pressures that he's receiving. And most of it's self-doing, self-inflicted. It's not like, I'm not saying that it's not his fault. It is down to his performances. There's no two words about it. But again, he's not getting a lot of support from his defenders around him either.
Do you think David Luiz would start for Chelsea if he was still there?
Yes, I think he would. I honestly think he would. But you know what? The David Luiz transfer is more to do with not so much David Luiz as a footballer and how he performs on a football pitch. It's more about the overall package that buy into the way that Frank wants to play, which I think David Luiz would have liked to have played in that system. But I think it was more a case that you're not going to be seen as a normal starter every week. You're part of a squad. Game time is not guaranteed and you're only going to play if and when. And as it turned out last season, he probably would have played a lot of games had he have stayed at the club. But he decided then and there that it wasn't right for him, and they agreed that he'd move on.
Now, we fall into the trap, and rightly so, when big teams make big mistakes and drop points. There's obviously, it's only natural to put the magnifying glass over them, but it's not to be forgotten that Southampton, again, Danny Ings, Shay Adams, thought Theo Walcott, when he features, was exciting and brilliant. This is a team, Mark, that this time last year, we were sort of, you know, updating the sack race. And they were firmly, you know, either going to be relegated or Hasenhüttl was going to be the first to go in the sack race. But all of a sudden, couldn't be further away.
Yeah, I remember you were saying every week that he had to get the sack.
And oh, here we go.
Every week. And I said, no, he's good.
You're right, though. I did. But, you know, it, rightly so. I think there's criticism early on. They were all over the shop, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. And obviously it came to a head at that drubbing at the hands of Leicester. Remarkable. And we said it before over the course of the many podcasts that we've done, is that Ralph Hasenhüttl has done an incredible job on a limited budget. And you know what, to get Danny Ings performing at the level he's playing at week in, week out, is remarkable. To turn their season around like he did last season, to, you know, they look a better side. Yes, they're going to have hiccups along the way. They're going to have setbacks. They're going to have bad performances here and there. But they tend to turn things around, and they did it again on the weekend. 3-0 down at Chelsea. Oh, sorry, 2-0 down, back to 2-2. And then down 3-2. It's just that never say die effort. And you know what? Yeah, you can turn around and say, well, Chelsea were bad and Chelsea made mistakes and led to goals. But it also comes about because of the pressure that the opposition applies to you. Had Southampton set back and almost resigned to the fact that they were going to lose against Chelsea, that never would have happened. They didn't. They kept going. They kept plugging. The minute they got a goal back, they thought, right, okay, let's go. Let's see if we can get another one back, and let's just see what the result's like for Chelsea. And as it turns out, it was enough to turn the game around and get a point out of it. A game that was dead and buried. And they should, by all accounts, really, you kind of go, well, 2-0 down, it's a tall, you know, it's a high mountain to climb. And they did a remarkable job in getting back in the game.
Won't be long. Back to Ollie and Mark in just 15 seconds. If you enjoy Two Sharp Reds, though, make sure you search Gegenpod wherever you get your podcasts. David Wiener is joined by thousands of games of experience both on and off the field. It's a great listen. Gegenpod, the Gegenpod. Okay, back to Two Sharp Reds.
Halftime drinks here on the Two Sharp Reds, Mark. I'm just going to take a beautiful sip of my Hey Diddle Shiraz, but as I do that, on the running order, I've just got, in pretty simple terms here, Fulham relegation update from Mark. Where are we at, do you think?
We're 1 point better off than last week. I mean, talk about shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, yeah, Mitrovic, who's normally, you know, he's so important to them. And he is so important to them. Scores a lot of goals, normally pretty assured at the penalty spot, misses the penalty. And then obviously hugely involved in giving away a penalty to Sheffield United up the other end. But I have to say, that lies, for me, solely at the feet of Areola. You know, he came out, should have taken the cross, collides with his own defender and drops the ball, which leads to Mitrovic fouling the Sheffield United player and giving away a penalty. So disappointing. They shot themselves in the foot, should have won the game.
Well, I think this is going to be a theme continuing, the halftime Fulham relegation update. It's not the most positive update that we could possibly do, but hey.
There's positives taken out of that game. I mean, Lookman looks great.
Yeah.
You know, Loftus-Cheek, I think, is a good acquisition to the side. It's, defensively, that's the biggest issue. Areola in goal, he's a good goalkeeper, but he's going to be heavily, hugely exposed all season. And it's really down to him, a little bit of improvement on defending or a massive improvement on defending, for them to have any chance of staying in the league.
Mark, let's talk wine before we get stuck into the other games in the Premier League. You know, I love a wine with a story. That's another thing. And just reading about this 2019 Hey Diddle Shiraz, which is very interesting. There were, in 2019, in the Adelaide Hills in particular, there were extreme temperatures throughout the February and March period, just before they were starting to pick those grapes. So it caused early ripening, and the vintage was done and dusted really, really quickly. Was reduced yields, making these wines even more exciting, which I really like, because not often I don't know about you, but I don't take into consideration what the weather can do to grapes. But in that scenario, where it's really hot and extreme, it probably was going back and forth, raining a lot. It can do sometimes in the Adelaide summers as well. So it's interesting to see how that can affect a grape. But you end up with a beautiful, you know, in terms of the flavour, there's more than one flavour sort of coming through, and that's sort of resulting of those extreme weathers, which is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I mean, off the back of that, my Protoss, Roble, it's from the Ribera del Duero, produced by Bodegas Protoss. And the thing about this one is the grapes used grow in the vineyards where the harvest is done manually, and the grapes grow through a selection process. So the grapes are determined and macerated cold to extract the best flavour from the skins. So it's I love that, the fact that it's done manually rather than by any machines.
Yeah, what are you saying, that there's the stomping with your feet, or just the first process?
I think it's just the first process of the actual grapes, where they're harvested by hand rather than by machines.
I like that a lot. I really like that. That could be another strand to this, really, is a wine with a story. Yes. Anytime there's a story involved, that's what we're on about, Mark.
Maybe it's a spin-off podcast. Maybe
totally.
Yeah.
Totally. That's way better than Two Sharp Red. It's one with the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm on. Idea for sausage.
Two Sharp Red with the story.
Yeah. Jeez, we're creative, aren't we? We're really creative. Hey, Mark, let's get stuck back into the football. I want to talk about Man City versus Arsenal. You'd have to say, mouth-watering prospect, but probably the most straightforward and boring game out of the lot of the weekend. Every other game, it was kicking off left, right and centre, but really just another day out. Arsenal were better than what they normally are against the Man City, but it sort of shows where we're at, really, that we're sort of happy with that.
Yeah, well, is that because Manchester City weren't as good as what they normally are when they play against Arsenal?
Yeah, I think we...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the middle.
I think it's a combination, yeah. Arsenal were definitely better. I think there's question marks to be asked about Bernardo's, the goal, the parry. You know, I thought his level, the way he's performed, I thought he should have done better with the parry.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I think he could have even caught it. But, you know, that's another thing. I thought Edison's save was spectacular to prevent Saka from scoring. That was a brilliant, brilliant save. It was a bit of a dull affair. The thing that I took out of that game the most was not what the performance was, more about what was said after the game. And it was about Aguero and how Guardiola said that he, like all of us, have to earn the right for a new contract. And you know, there's a lot of... that's hugely correct, of course. And more often than not, that's not always the case. More often than not, that a player will actually, based on merit, based on accomplishments, longevity and his regular performances, that they believe that he's going to get back to that level. He was only out for 4 months. It's not like he was out for 12 months or 6 months, 12 months with a really, really... I mean, he was out with, obviously, serious enough injury to keep him out that long, but not a career-ending injury. His goal record, year after year after year, speaks for itself. So I found that a bit interesting. And the fact is that we're coming up towards the middle to end of October. Mm-hmm. As of January the 1st, you can speak to any other clubs. And there's no doubt in my mind there's going to be a serious number of clubs around vying for a signature. And I think, I also believe that Manchester City between now and January 1st will be offering him a new contract.
Hey, speaking of Sergio Aguero, though, of course, he was also heavily talked about after the game, after he grabbed the lino around her neck. Well, not really, more the shoulder. Sure.
Oh, yeah. The reason, you know what, I get it. And, you know, you shouldn't. And there's no rules to state you can't touch the officials. But it's silly. It's silly and should be warned to say, listen, you know, it's not appropriate. Get on with the game. Leave the officials alone. Doesn't matter who the officials are. Get on with it. Leave them alone. Talk to them, yes, but don't touch them.
If you do that to the match ref, though, there's no way you get away with it. Surely.
It depends. No, you know what? It really depends. It depends. In England, what I found, it really depends on the referee. Depends on your relationship, depends on what you're saying, how you're speaking to them, you're showing them respect. It really depends. I don't think that's cut and dry that you can't. I just think you shouldn't, but there are some referees, and again, depends on the circumstances, you can do it.
I think there needs to be a cut and dry rule. Like other sports, many sports as well in Australia, it's just a blanket rule. You just go, if you touch the referee under, even if I've seen it before in other sports like AFL where you're trying to mimic what has happened, you're sort of acting it out and you've sort of, you know, lightly pushed the umpire. You go, well, you're getting a fine. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what circumstances, cut and dry. Do not touch them.
Yeah, listen, but then you know what people would complain about again as well, because they're complaining about the fact that we've gotten cut and dry decisions in terms of VAR in an offside decision,
yep,
where there's a line drawn and they're able to determine whether they're over it, and people still don't like it. So if you were to bring in a rule and say, well, you can't touch a referee's full stop, there'd be people out there complaining because that's the nature of the beat. People just like the window and things like that.
Mm. Speaking of that quote game that we played a little earlier, 2 points thrown away, you guessed correctly in Frank Lampard, but another man who you did guess absolutely must be thinking, this is Jose Mourinho. After Tottenham gave away a pretty clear 3 points and they gave away that 3-goal lead in a matter of moments, I believe, if I can remember the quote exactly, they're the first team in Premier League to be able to not lose after trailing by 3 goals as late as the 81st minute. It was just a bombardment. And actually, as well, Mark, reminds me of Jose's first game in charge for Tottenham, of course, was against West Ham. And it was quite similar. It ended 3-2, so he didn't get that full comeback. But it was an extraordinary tale of two halves.
Just to add on to what you were saying about Frank Lampard said we threw away 2 points. Jose Mourinho actually said, so I actually got it both right, because what Jose Mourinho said, my guys were not strong enough to cope with it psychologically. The last few seconds, we lost 2 points. So technically, he said the same thing pretty much.
Well, you know,
thrown away. So I've nailed both of them, haven't I? Let's be honest.
Yeah, well done. Geez, you can't stand losing, can you? You just can't.
No, I just know, because I was reading it, I was listening to the interview today that Jose Mourinho gave post match, and I just know what he's like, and I know in the change, you know, there's two sides of him. Sometimes he comes into a game, and I think I've mentioned this before, at halftime, after a game, and there are times where you come in and you think, wow, he is going to tear shreds off people. And he's very calm, very serious, but very calm, doesn't say anything. Or you'll say, okay, it's fine. Listen, these things happen. We go again. You know, we've got a big game on again. Right. And then that's kind of it. And there are other times you think, geez, we did it right today. You know, that was a decent result. That's a decent performance. Happy with that. We won. But, you know, didn't play our best, but we won. And he'll come in and tear shreds out of someone or out of the team. And so he's really, at times, he's really hard to read. So it would have been interesting to know what he said to his players after the game, whether he tore shreds off people or whether he was calm, serious, and was very clear in his message in terms of this can't happen again. If we want to compete for Champions League, compete for winning titles, this can't happen again. Or whether he just came in and tore, you know, and let loose. And it's an interesting one, because most of the time you can't pick whether he has or not, or whether he's going to or not. He'll just come in and either explode or be really reserved. And people are always looking around going, why hasn't he unleashed himself? Why hasn't he torn shreds off someone? I remember he lost his first ever home game in the Premier League for Chelsea. And I played in that game against Sunderland, and I didn't do very well. One of the goals I dropped, parried out, and they scored from it. And then we conceded, Azpilicueta conceded a penalty late on, dived in, and we lost the game 2-1. Sunderland were fighting for their lives. And Azpilicueta's come in crying. He's actually almost like bawling his eyes out. And the manager was so like taken aback, or not even taken aback. Actually, he was so encouraged almost by Azpilicueta's reaction. He was like, this is what I want. This is how I want players to react. This guy feels for it. He's devastated. And this is what it's about. You know, this is the example I want to show you, is that, you know, everyone makes mistakes. And yes, we lost the game. So what? I lost the game at home. Who cares? In my first game, we lost at home. Who cares? But if, you know, we've got to learn from it. And if this is the type of emotion, the type of attitude we have from players, we'll be all right.
Wow. He wears his heart on his sleeve, Azpilicueta, doesn't he? He does. Yeah. So that doesn't surprise me at all. But do you get the sense that anyone on the Tottenham side would be doing that after the game?
Maybe. Man, listen, I wouldn't be surprised. Who are they? I don't know them well enough. But I don't know who the characters are in that change room that are the players that are more emotional or a little bit more sensitive. Because you get to know that amongst a group of players.
Yep.
You know, players can be quite sensitive. You know, players on match day, that change from being that happy, serious, happy, but like real good pro, serious pro. Like Ashley Quinter is a really happy kind of guy generally day to day, but on the pitch, he's serious, gets on with it, does his work, and it's really important. And I think it comes about because he's probably never been the most gifted player, but he's had to really work for it. Yeah. And he's never taken anything for granted. And therefore, it affects him so much when things don't go so well, because he's about doing the right things day in, day out. And if he makes a mistake, it's kind of like, how am I making a mistake? I do everything right every day. I do everything. I do my work. I work extra. And I still make a mistake every now and then. And I just think that can boil over more easily with that sort of player. A player who's more naturally gifted, for me, in my experience, tend to be less emotional about a performance or a loss or a mistake that they've made, because they just go, well, I take risks and that's going to happen. And, you know, some weeks I make a mistake and we lose, or some weeks I make a mistake, I don't make a mistake and I do something brilliant, we win. And I remember Hazard was kind of along those lines.
Just sort of, that plays life on the edge.
Incredible amount of ability, natural ability, insane amount of natural ability, and rested too often on that natural ability. Mm. He did do the work and did do the extra stuff. He went up notches and he became that player. That's why Real Madrid have bought him. I fear for him now is that 2 years in a row, he's come back overweight for Real Madrid. And has he now rested on his laurels? Has he reached the pinnacle in his career where he believes, I am at the highest level. I've accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish because I wanted to go to Real Madrid from a very young age. I'm there now. And it's almost like, it feels like from afar, from the observation, it's almost like he's accomplished everything he needed to accomplish.
So let's just go back to this Tottenham West Ham game and just sum up what was a pretty extraordinary end to the game. I think it's important not to get lost on the fact that Kane was unbelievable. And I think it's probably will go under the radar. He's almost playing a bit like Wayne Rooney a little bit in many respects. His position on the field has changed as well. His passing looks elite and something that probably hasn't been talked about up until the tail end of, you know, before he got injured and then this year. But he was special yesterday. He really special.
He's been special for so many years, hasn't he? Yeah, he's had dips and every player does, but... And he has adapted his game a little bit. He's matured. Maybe it's more of a case of maturing and altering his game a little bit. Or maybe it is a combination of the maturing, the injuries sustained. Maybe that could be also the case. I also think players around him have stepped up, particularly Son.
Yeah.
And are more consistent. Their understanding is insane, the two of them. And... you know, where would Spurs be if they didn't have a Harry Kane?
Yeah, I don't know. Not where they're at. That's like 100%. Nowhere near.
Yeah, but it was a clear 2 points dropped. And it was, you know, I'm sure if he hadn't said it outwardly to his team, inwardly would have been fuming with dropping the 2 points or throwing away 2 points.
What about Fabianski? I think he's brilliant. He's been sensational for the Hammers. Hammer of the Year, I think. Maybe not two times, at least once. It looked like he was rooted to the ground for all three of those goals. I don't know if that's sort of half normal, would you say, or were you should be on your toes, no?
Yeah, listen, some good finishes from Harry Kane. But I also think since he's come back from his injury, and I think last season they rushed him back, I actually don't think he was 100% right when he came back in, because he looked a little bit uncertain and his performances also showed that. He definitely not reached back to the heights of when he first went on that first season, like you said, where he got, you know, player of the season, and he rightfully so, he was brilliant. At Swansea, he was brilliant. So I think he's, at the moment, he's still struggling to get back to the form. Mm-hmm. And no surprise, you know, when you're down a little bit in confidence, when you're not performing as well as you should be or had been in the past, you're always pushing and fighting to try and get back to that level. And maybe, you know, that also has distracted him a little bit. And I don't think he's quite playing at the level, that he had played in the past at West Ham.
And the final thing on this game, it was extraordinary debut or re-debut, I suppose, for Bale. Should have probably scored that goal. And then, of course, after then, it was just a rampage from West Ham. But Lanzini's goal, goal of the season so far, would you say? And will be slash hard to beat?
know what? Yeah, it's a real big, it's a really interesting debate about what constitutes a goal of the season. So is it a strike, a single strike? Is it like taking a touch, dropping a shoulder, turning and striking at top corner? Is that a better goal than someone who, like Son did last season, ran almost three quarters of the length of the pitch, beating seven or eight players, kind of all outrunning players and getting past players and scoring a solo goal where he almost side-footed in the back of the net? Is that better than a wonder strike like Lanzini's? And that's always a big debate. It's an open debate. If someone's scoring a free kick from 35 yards out and putting it top pins, I think it happens because it happens fairly frequently throughout the course of the season. People take that a little bit for granted of how difficult a task that actually is to do. Listen, it's definitely in for goal of the month. Let's put it that way. Ultimately, will it be in the mix for goal of the season? Depends on how the season goes, really. But at this rate, the amount of goals that are being scored and the type of goals scored, that list of goal of the season is going to be the longest list of all time.
But another thing that adds to a goal of the season is context as well. And the context of that game was pretty huge, you know, with a couple of kicks to go.
Yeah, but see, when they're being judged, I'm on the panel. I'm one of many people on that panel of judging goals of the month, goals of the season.
Are you really? And
I am, yeah.
So, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you don't take them in context of the game. You see the highlights, you see the goals, you see the selection of goals that are put forward for goal of the month. You review the goals and you take them on their own merit. You're not taking the context of. I mean, I don't take them in context of the game. I take it in the context of the actual ability, the technical ability, the goal itself, as opposed to the context of the game. Let's not forget, at the end of the season, when you've got, say, eight goals of the season to choose from, you more often than not don't remember exactly the context of the game. What goal of that game was it? If they've won 2-0, 1-0, 3-0, 4-3, what goal was it? Which goal was it? You know, and that's the thing. More often than not, you don't take it in the context.
And I suppose the other good thing about having you on that, you'll be able to look from the point of view of, could the goalkeeper have done anything? So I'll ask you that. Could Lloris have done anything? And if so, no, then surely it's got to be the goal of the year if you physically can't do anything about it.
The only thing Lloris didn't do was save it. You know, he got fingertips to it. And I reckon Lloris would be disappointed that he didn't save it. And the reason I say that is because he got so close. Mm. I thought he did a tremendous job of getting so close to it. And as a goalkeeper, when you get so close to it and you get a touch on it like he did, you kick yourself that you actually weren't able to push it over and save it because he was so, so close. And it was a wonderful strike. And no one will ever point fingers. Other than I hear there's been a comment saying that he went with his wrong hand. I mean, which is just outrageous to say that he went with his wrong hand. I mean, that's a person who has next to zero idea of technical ability or technical aspect of goalkeeping.
Why is that?
Because the way the ball was where the ball was moving from, or moving to, the direction of the flight, the power of the flight, the position of the goalkeeper, the only way he was going to get anywhere near the ball was using his top hand. If he uses his bottom hand, there's a point of when you are flying through the air and you're almost not horizontal to the ground, but you're an angle foot to the ground, your body, the top hand reaches further at a higher point, not necessarily wider, but it'll reach higher. And that was a high shot into the top corner. He had to go with his top hand to get anywhere near it. Had he have gone with his bottom hand, which some goalkeepers only use their bottom hand, like Jordan Pickford, he would have zero chance of reaching it.
Very interesting. You learn something new every day here on the Two Sharp Reds, don't you?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, if you lie down on your sort of mostly on the bed, right? And then you put your top hand up and reach as far as you can.
Yeah,
and then put it down, and then use your other hand and see how far you reach.
Yeah, I'm with you.
The angle changes a little bit then as well, so you've got to try and maintain the same angle. When you're lying down, you can reach far higher with the top hand.
Yeah,
you can reach further with your bottom hand, straight across, but you can't reach as high.
Yeah, I'm with you. And are you also putting yourself in a possible position to get yourself injured if you lead with your bottom hand? Like, if that's up front, or...
No, not necessarily. But what your top hand helps you do as well is, by using your top hand across your body like that, it helps propel you through the air a bit more.
Mm, almost like you're about to launch into a cartwheel, almost.
Yeah, without spinning around, yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. I love it.
With your ballerina background, you should get it more than most.
100%. I'm totally with you. Yeah. No, I mean, if I was to be critical, I would have liked Lloris to do a step ball change, part of all Ray, then into the dive. But that's just my contemporary dance talking, you know.
You lost me after step forward.
Yeah, oh, step forward. It was a step ball change, Mark, and you know it. Come on. Mark, how have you enjoyed your wine here on Two Sharp Reds today?
That's delightful. As always, again, it's another wine that I've had numerous times before, and I thought today was one of those moments because of the fact that we weren't able to see each other in person. Then I've got to bring out one of the big guns, and it's one that I, you know, it's not hugely expensive. It's around the kind of €10 bottle.
Okay.
It's a delightful bottle of wine.
Well, I've, of course, gone for the Hey Diddle Shiraz in celebration of Brad Ebert's retirement from Port Adelaide and the AFL. Extreme temperatures in February and March caused the early ripening and vintage meant that it was done very quickly. So the overall 2019 vintage of the Hey Diddle is a high-quality vintage with reduced yields, making these wines and the grapes even more exciting of a prospect. A dashing deep crimson with purple hues filling the glass. The nose is overrun with aromas of flowering herbs, thyme, bay leaf, and violets. The pure core of the fruit has drive and balance to boot. So on that, I think I might as well just continue to say who I'm comparing this wine to. I'm a little nervous because last week's comparison was my best ever. I'm not as confident this time around, but I think there's enough to say that I'm still in the upper echelon, which is sort of what I'm looking for. I'm not looking to beat last week, just want to still be within the conversation of I've done a good job. So that the key things in particular that have got me is the fact that 2019 was their standout vintage of Hey Diddle wine, and 2019 was the clear breakout vintage, but also the fact that it was really quick. So, and it happened in a flash that these grapes were able to ripen really quickly, which adds to the making it such an exciting prospect. So this player, 2019 was their best year to date, but it was how quickly it seemed to happen, which almost adds to that, oh, geez, this guy's come out of almost nowhere on the biggest stage. But also one of the flavorings that's really obvious is thyme. And in particular, if I was just to add an ing onto the back end of that, this man's timing is unbelievable. Some of the best timing of his strikes that I've ever seen. And I really like as well at the end of the explanation of the Shiraz, it does say that it's at its purest core, at the heart of what makes this wine so good is its balance, but also its drive. And this man has so much drive in terms of when the going gets tough, whether it's he's coming off from the bench, his drive to be the very best is pretty pretty obvious. But his balance, I've seen a few times now where people have tried to push him off when he's at high speed, and his balance to be able to maintain that high speed is exceptional. So with all of that in mind, I'm going for my favourite player at the moment is the great Erling Haaland.
Wow.
Thoughts?
That was like someone that you haven't really prepared for, and you said you don't think he's anywhere near as good as your previous one. You just pulled that out of your proverbial. And that was a good effort, mate. I'm impressed. I thought you did really, really well there.
It wasn't as good, though, was it, as last week? But it was still good.
That was up there, mate. It was up there. I got locked in the whole explanation. But it drew me back in again. And, yeah, no, I read it. And again, you know, maybe some people might say I was a little bit harsh a couple of weeks ago, giving you a bit of stick about your...
Say that. Not Harris, some did.
But you know what? What did your mum say?
She just said, are you being bullied? Is everything all right? I go, yeah, look, I am being bullied. I do find it uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, you know, it is Mark. You know, I just sort of got to nod my head and I kind of like it at the same time. So Look, she's out. She's looking after me. It's all good.
Did she not say password fair?
No. Well, this is the thing. She then accidentally sent a message that was meant to go to my dad, but sent it to me saying, Mark was spot on there. He's an absolute idiot. So, best of both worlds. Now, talk to me about your wine. Who have you gone for?
Understandable, mate. I mean, you know, I have to agree with you, Mum.
Totally.
Okay, so, well, you know, following that, Jesus. Now, my Protus Roblet 2018, Ribera Duero Vineyard, wonderful bottle of wine. Had many, many times I've had a bottle or two of these, particularly over the summer, which I had way too much, but who cares? It was the summer, and totally. Even though I didn't get it in summer, who cares? It was brilliant. Loved every moment of it. And it comes down to this wine is that, you know, it's full and concentrated on the nose with a long lingering finish. The other thing that popped out to me was the grapes harvest manually. And this player that I'm thinking of, because of the quality of the wine, is a quality player, a player that not necessarily had an enormous amount of ability, but he was something that manually did a lot of work. So grapes harvested manually kind of drew me to this player is that he worked on his game. He worked at it. He started off humble beginnings at Millwall in England. And he was a fighter, a grafter. And he turned out to be one of the most prolific headers of the ball, full and concentrated on the nose, which reminded me of him heading the ball and scoring so many goals in the Premier League with his head, obviously becoming an Evertonian and being a massive player during the David Moyes era. And obviously, he lingered a lot in the end, didn't he? He played a lot of football at different countries around the world. And obviously, as we all know, he's a prolific goal scorer for Australia and was, you know, played at 4 World Cups for Australia, the only player to do so. And this wine, because it's such a good bottle of wine, I have to compare it with none other than the big man, Tim Cahill.
Yeah, I love it. I really like that. At one point there, I thought you were going to say Matt Smith from Millwall when he said, great header of the ball. Wait, it's not going to be Matt Smith, is it? But the lingering, that's spot on. It just it did go through the stage there with Timmy, wasn't it, where he just pop up and go, oh, he's in India now. Okay, fair enough. Good on him.
Yeah, it was India. It was to do a legacy, wasn't it?
Yes. And speaking of Tim, has he been liking your social media posts? Because fans of the show would know that you know, in the early days of the Sharp Reds, you had a small breakdown, which resulted in Tim liking every single one of your photos, and the Socceroos had posted it. That, you know, it's good to see that you guys have sort of made up. But has he gone off the wagon, or is he still liking, or what's he doing?
You know, I've liked quite a lot of his photos.
Yep.
He's not liked any of my photos since. But there's a reason for that.
Why? What did you do?
I haven't posted anything.
Oh, okay.
I've not posted anything for probably the last 2 months or so, 2.5 months. So, and it's quite strange, you know, because I'm actually gaining more people every time. Every day I wake up and I've got new people following me, and I'm thinking, hang on, I'm going to stop posting and more people start following me.
Interesting.
The more I post, maybe fewer people will actually start following me. I don't know. But yeah, so, Champions League starts up tomorrow again. So I'll be back to posting.
Okay.
I'll restart again. I posted a couple of things on Twitter, reposts, and a couple of little bits and pieces. But my Instagram has been very, very, very quiet.
Didn't post anything for my birthday either, I noticed, which is fine. But that would have got a few likes. But yeah, anyway.
I did wish you a happy birthday, didn't I?
Yeah, but it's 2020, Mark. You know, that doesn't really cut it anymore. You know, you're not really friends with someone if you don't post about it. That's sort of the rules.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's all right.
Listen.
Next year. There's always next year.
I'm old school in that regard, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm still very new to this whole social media thing. It does take me a bit to get onto it,
yeah,
as you know. So you know what? You've still got next year. And
yep.
Listen, you'll be evaluated throughout the course of the next year now. And whether or not you warrant a post fully dedicated to Mr. Ollie Gill.
A little bit like Aguero trying to earn himself a contract. It's very much a similar thing. You know, you don't just get it. You don't get a post from Shorter.
The similarity you have with Aguero,
yeah,
right, is that you're right in terms of him having to earn his new contract, the only difference is you have to earn the opportunity for me to post about your book. That's the only similarity.
The only similarities. That's it.
Yes.
Height? Similar?
Sorry?
We've got similar height, I would have thought.
He's probably still taller than you.
Yeah. Good tan. We've both got pretty good, like, nice olive skin.
No. He's miles better than you in tan. Come on, let's be honest. Let's be honest.
And blonde frosted tips. There you go. Done. Got the two things. It's all that counts.
You're looking a bit ginger looking from here.
I reckon it's just the light. No, it's definitely caramel. Really? On that note, Mark, I'll leave you to finish off the podcast for us.
Yes, it's this week where it was the week we believed that was going to be the one where our reunion was going to happen, didn't we? We thought that we were going to see each other in person for the first time in many, many, many months. But unfortunately, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer. And that bottle of red wine that's sitting in your corner of your room, which I'm still yet to believe still exists.
That's there. I'm looking at it.
And you keep looking in that direction. But for all I know, there could be absolutely nothing in that corner of your room you're looking at. So on that note, let's hope for another week of, let's hope that maybe changes will occur during the week and maybe we can get there next week, unlikely. Yeah. And if not, we might see you with a different colour beanie next week. Look forward to it.
Tremendous outro, Mark. Cheers.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.